Okay, we are live.
Yo, yo.
Yo, Michael, welcome back to the show. Soulcast, round two.
Round two, right? Round one was in March, right?
It was a while ago, but a congratulations is in order because that was the most played episode of 2023.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of surprised by that, to be honest. Like, because my account isn't that big and you had a lot of excellent guests, obviously. So it is quite an honor, I must say.
Yeah, I think it just speaks to the nature of, you know, what we're talking about was quite unique. Hopefully we can get into some more of that today. But yeah, since March, I guess a lot has happened, a lot of BS, a lot of good things, a lot of bad things. But 2023 was really a lead up kind of year. We're seeing a lot of things change in the macro. And I know for you, 2024... you're looking towards that as a kind of culmination point, correct?
Yeah, so it's interesting, right? I had, since like 2018, 2019, I came across like random various sources that it wasn't very blunt. It was just like a few random, completely random, and also a really strong dose of intuition that implied to me and said to me that 2024, and it makes sense, right? Because it's a US election year.
Yeah.
And we all know how those go.
Yeah.
And it just really rings the alarm bells for me. And I've really been like mentally preparing for this year. I know this sounds a little crazy, right? Like it sounds like almost, yeah, it almost sounds like dramatic. And I'm not trying to be dramatic. It's just in my heart of hearts, I really feel like this is going to be such a pivotal year. And the question is it going to be a peak or the beginning of a peak? And that is a very big question. And lastly, to top that off, I was doing a space with Mr. David Icke. You know who he is, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So I was doing a space with him, and I said, David, let me ask you a question. I said, what is your outlook and opinion on 2024? And he said the same, he said that 2024, he has the same feeling that he has pinpointed it as a very critical and pivotal year in which a lot will be exposed on a collective level in humanity. And I think with the combination of the US election, where we are from a macro standpoint, where we are, and I just think there's going to be a lot of chaos, a lot of drama. And yeah, I mean, the only thing you could do is really just be mentally prepared, right?
Yeah, so pretty much since COVID, we've had narrative of larger societal potential of social breakdown and the things that make our society work that we take for granted, most people take for granted every day, and is really like how fragile this whole system really is in the way that modernity lives, in the sense of how do you get your food? Most people go to the grocery store, and those grocery stores only have about 2 days of food
that
gets replaced rather swiftly, and that's at normal rates, right? If everyone decides to get all their food because they're panicking about supply chains going down, then it's empty and okay, now you got to restock those things. That's how it works. And this whole thing is very fragile. And we saw that with COVID, with the BS that they said, whether it was people freaking out or whether it was these, you know, bullshit trading laws that they tried to impose in order to, you know, artificially create something, whereas if we just left to our own devices, it would have been fine. But you saw how fragile the system was. So that was an indication of what could potentially happen. Now, thankfully, at that point, COVID was actually not real in a lot of ways. So we kind of absorbed that blow, and it was very disruptive in a lot of ways, but it didn't lead to the kind of full breakdown that some people were predicting. That doesn't mean that that's not possible. You know, nothing especially in the way that the system is set up, and not just the food, but hospital supplies, fuel, all of these things really only have a couple of day running time. And so to me, just objectively, I'm not being a doomer or being, you know, scared or anything. Objectively, the systems that are in place that keep society running are relatively fragile. So you have to accept that and know that. And in my thinking about that recently, there's also this narrative of solar flares is an interesting one that's been popping up. Is like 2024 will be the year of really strong solar flares. And
well, let me actually stop you right there, because what I was, the reason, the first thing I saw on 2024 was that we were going to get these ridiculous solar flares, which you're seeing right now. If you have seen the last picture of the solar flare that we have, there is a literal hole in the sun right now. So you're talking mega solar flares. And they said, again, this is some woo-woo stuff that I saw on the internet. They said that the elites are trying to jump in front of these solar flares. This was back in like 2018, 2019, because these solar flares that come in 2024 are going to vastly expand humanity's consciousness. Now, whether I believe in that or not doesn't matter, because right now we are seeing massive solar flares. So it makes you wonder.
So there's several perspectives on that. Would you have known that there were solar flares without news articles telling you that there were solar flares coming? Just like,
no.
So probably that's not, just,
but I will say
that's one thing to keep in mind with this is like, yes, I'm sure solar flares happen and everything, but when I see news articles that say, yep, next year we're going to get solar flares, so maybe we're going to get rolling blackouts, because solar flares can affect, you know, they have electromagnetic pulses that can affect power grids and internet communications. I see that as a setup for disruption that could be actually made by a human with a pair of pliers and cutting off some power supply lines instead. And then the solar flares is like this useful patsy for this thing. And then, you know, there's the whole expansion of that with the power lines are down, the internet communication system is down. Therefore, the money that everyone relies on and the banking systems and the internet that connects pretty much how we do all of our trade now, that is flimsy. So we need to reset it and become this new system that's not going to get knocked out. And then you have the kind of larger narrative controls of, oh, the government needs to make this new money. And that's how I see that playing in. And I'm just thinking to myself, the solar flares, I've seen some weird clouds the last couple of days. So maybe someone said that that was the result of solar flares. But I just want to like, yes, I'm totally open to the fact that solar flares exist and people are just predicting them based on meteorological patterns and meter readings. I'm sure they exist, but I'm just like, there's this larger thing of, would social trends happen if it wasn't for the mass predictive programming of the news talking about them? Like, would you actually notice that in your real life? So what do you think about that?
You know, it's funny because, so there's two ways to look at this, right? I was getting these really, really, really strange sensations. I think it was over the summer or the springtime. And I would feel this tingling sensation go up my spine and across my head, across the top of my head. It was something I never felt before. And I was, then I went on Twitter that night. And someone described the exact same sensation, which I never felt in my life. Mm. And it was the same sensation, a tingling feeling up your spine that goes up the back of your neck to the top of your head, and it's like itchy and things of that nature. It feels electrical. Allegedly, and the only reason why I give this any credence is because someone virtually explained exactly what I felt, and they said it was due to the solar flares. Now, you said something else there. Are these solar flares being used to condition us for the idea that the grid can go down right conveniently before an epic election, a pretty epic election? And it's going to be, you know, it's funny because Trump has been relatively quiet so far. Like, you're not really feeling that energy that he usually comes with. And I'm asking myself, when is that energy going to come? Are they keeping him off the news? Is he just not have that bravado and that energetic effect? Because if you remember in 2015, the minute he walked down that escalator, he owned the planet.
Yeah.
And I don't see that no more. Now, is that going to pick up? You would think, right? But he also didn't have it in 2020. So it's like, is that it? Is his aura gone? Because it feels like it right now, right? So we're getting a little off topic, but the idea is here, we're in front of an epic election. They are conditioning us with so many different things right now. Civil war, cyber attack. You're starting to see a lot of cyber attacks being talked about now in the media, even though they've been going on forever. All of a sudden, they're bringing it into the media. So I think this just all comes down to one thing. We are at a point in this system. And, you know, I want to go back to something you said before we get too far away from it. The just-in-time supply chain, for example, where we have 3 days of food, fuel, whatever the case is, water. And, you know, I always say that, you know, you hear people talk about, oh, life's so hard and this, that, and the third. We have never, other than the drama that we deal with, because mostly of the internet, we have never, and obviously the inflation the last couple of years, but other than that, we have never lived in a more comfortable time in society. And that's why when I hear people say, oh, well, life's so hard, and it is, don't get me wrong, I'm not putting down anyone who says that stuff, but you could have food to your door in 2 seconds, 2 minutes. Yes, it's a little expensive, but the convenience we have is absolutely ridiculous. And the way I see all this, if you have a place to rest your head at night, a warm bed in the, you know, in the dead of the winter, and you have food to eat and you could support yourself, you should be very, very grateful and thankful for those things. Because our grandparents and our great-grandparents, great-grandparents for you, they struggled for everything. And, you know, they tell you those stories where they went to school with their ripped boots in the snow and they went barefoot. You ever hear those stories from great-grandparents? Oh, I walked barefoot to school in the snow. And they're not lying. And, you know, so it makes you, like, so it's really ironic because despite how crazy the world is today and, like, all the drama that we have, and don't get me wrong, it is definitely a spectacular time and a very weird time. We also live in a very rich, abundant society that we take for granted.
Oh, 100%. I mean, my granddad lived through, well, both granddads, but my granddad lived through World War II. And there was a time where they had rations and the whole family would get 2 apples, a bit of ham, and they had to make that last, you know, a week. And that's the real hard yards is something we've never experienced, at least my generation in my, you know, my section of Western society. All we've ever known is abundance. All we've ever known is full grocery stores and peace, relative peace, depending on where you are. And there are many people in the world that don't have that. So even, you know...
You know, that's another thing. You know, you mentioned peace, right? You know, it's so funny. I see people, oh, well, New York City's so horrible. Chicago is pretty damn bad, right? But, you know, oh, the crime in California is out of control. Well, you know, I'm 44 years old, and I grew up in New York City in a very legendary time period. I mean, the people that were rolling around New York City at the time were larger-than-life people, and you don't really see that those types anymore. And everybody was hungry. Everyone was a hustler, and everybody was out getting it. And there was a different mentality. And when I used to walk through Times Square, which right now is literally Disneyland, it might be dangerous, more dangerous. The subways are definitely dangerous, but it's a different type of dangerous. It's more, there's more crazies walking around, but crime compared to the 90s and 80s in New York City is substantially down. And anyone who tries to say it isn't, it just didn't live in that time period. And, you know, I could go to certain places in Brooklyn now where I could not walk through when I was a kid, or I would get mugged or I would get shot.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up in a somewhat urban suburb, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like it was a suburb, but it was still urban type, and there was like it had a sort of hood element to it, but it wasn't a hood. It was a middle class neighborhood, but the hood was right there, if you know what I'm saying. And I used to hear gunshots all the time. I'm talking about a few times a week I would hear gunshots. There was this place like maybe 5 minutes from me that if you drove by at night and you drove by a few times, chances are you hear gunshots going off. So where I'm going with all this is, despite all the craziness you hear and despite all the stuff you see on the internet, society, even if you look at the FBI crime data, crime is way down. And the internet makes everything dramatic. Because when I was growing up, me and my friends used to get into fights all the time. We've gotten into a couple of fights, whatever, riot squads. Like, we got into a fight at the South Ferry. And it was like, no joke, it was like 200 people on 100 people. And the riot squad was out within 5 minutes. And if that happened today, it would have been the biggest deal on the internet, because everyone has a camera phone and everyone's recording it. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So where I'm going with all this, it's like the internet dramatizes so much stuff that you really can't tell. It's like if you get off the internet and go outside, life is fine. You know what I'm saying? For the most part.
Yeah, definitely. Again, it depends kind of where you are and what your experience is and circumstances. Of course, it's hard to generalize, and a lot of people are,
of course,
experiencing different things. But it's like this. Yes. The larger mental appreciation or the mental perspective of the population at large, that is down. And that could be a function of many things. It could be a function of intentional demoralization from various powers that want to get in your head, and they want the populace to be scared and fearful. And we both know why that is a goal of some people or some organizations. And there's really no future vision that people are looking towards, because there's no like, oh, America's, you know, building, and it's all America's going down, America's failing. So
yeah, let me I want to talk to you right about that right there, because you brought up an important point. So when I was a stockbroker, when I was first coming up, and just the 90s in general, like when I was graduating high school and becoming a young man into my early 20s, which was I turned 21 in 2001 or 2000, and bro, when I tell you, people were so optimistic about the future before September 11th.
Yep.
People were so optimistic about the future. Like, you call people, like I used to call people across the country, because that's what I did. I was a broker. Everybody was just so positive. Everyone had this vision of this grand, beautiful, high-tech future. The internet was just coming out. Yep. No one knew what to expect, but it was new and exciting. And we were building towards this beautiful society, and then September 11th happened.
Yep.
And that was the turning point. That was one of the turning points, but that was the biggest turning point. And then we could say it was 2008. Then we can say it was then some things happened, you know, Occupy Wall Street I think happened in 2011, which started identity politics, and then we had COVID. Right? Am I missing anything? No,
they're the main ones.
COVID, and then now we're in this crazy, crazy world. So I wanted to just make that point to you. It wasn't always like what you just said. Like, they're trying to demoralize society, and I do believe, yes, they are doing this purposely. And it wasn't always like that. The future, when I was a kid, when I was coming up, the future was so bright we needed shades. I'm not even
kidding. Yeah, well, I wasn't as old, but I can, you know, the general, I was always tapped into how people were feeling even from a young age, and the general outlook is just so different. And it's kind of sad, but the 9/11 really was a tipping point. Some people would call that the beginning of the Age of Aquarius, like in terms of the occult organizations that pay attention to these things. 9/11 was a ritual, right? For people that are unaware, it wasn't just your run-of-the-mill terrorist attack. It was an intentional, planned, timed occult ritual that was done for a number of reasons, one of which was enriching people that took out insurance beforehand and all the rest of it. But
well, yeah, if you I know Gary, who I respect his opinion very much, Gary the numbers guy, he said that
GG33,
and I agree with him. Yeah, he said 9/11 was a ritual to bring in the Age of Aquarius. I hope he doesn't mind me quoting him on this, but and I completely agree. And if you look at all the symbolism behind it, you know, we can get into a lot of crazy stuff, and I don't have my details down 100%. Like, some people say the birthday of Christ was 9/11. I don't know how true that is. Mm-hmm. And the idea that the two buildings made an 11, which is the 11th sign, Aquarius.
Yep.
Then the idea that, you know, those two buildings being knocked down, made into one. And, you know, the whole 11 thing, right? There was so many, there was so much 11 symbolism on 9/11, ironically, that it was, and that was ironically my, well, not ironically, it was actually very practical that I, you know, that is what sent me down the rabbit hole, September 11th. Right after September 11th, I went down the rabbit hole. And let me tell you, it wasn't a pleasant experience, because when you are doing that by yourself, not collectively with the population like we did with COVID, when you're going down the rabbit hole by yourself at that time, bro, you got called crazy by people who you told this stuff to. And it wasn't very nice. And imagine finding out about all this stuff. And I don't want to get into it too much, but all the stuff we hear about kids, all these crazy rituals they do. Imagine getting into that when no one else was looking at it. Well, very few people, so to say.
Yeah. And it's a different world now. And so this is the silver lining perspective of it all, is these intense, disturbing events that shock consciousness are really what needed to happen in order for more people to wake up. And this is, you take the macro zoom out view, is that in this Age of Aquarius, the age of revelation, things being revealed, knowledge being revealed, to the point where now most people, you can raise pretty much most conspiracy theories amongst relative normies and not be instantly discounted. Like, they're open to it. And a lot of people now will be, oh yeah, COVID was a scam. Like, it's at the point where the noticing of everything is so high and so widespread, where TikTok is blasting conspiracy theories to millions of people relatively quickly, whereas before you had to really seek it out. You had to be on these obscure message boards and forums in order to dive into it, or old books and things like that, whereas now you can just search up a PDF of these things. And that is the, as I said, the silver lining of all of this craziness, is that somewhere on the other side is a macro societal perspective where most people are truly aware now of what's going on. And that is the consciousness level that needed to occur in order to create something that was better than the society of the optimistic 90s.
Yeah. And, you know, it coincides with a lot of things. Like, for example, like I mentioned on the last podcast, next year we are going, Pluto is moving into Aquarius for 20 years. And a lot of people think, is it next year? Yeah, it's next year, 2024. And a lot of people think that that is the official start of the Age of Aquarius, even though some people will argue that it doesn't start till 100 years. It doesn't matter. When you're at the end of a 2,000-year cycle and you're in the last 100 years, yeah, the energy is shifting. Yeah. So, you know, we just had, like, we had this great uncovering, and we are in what I call a transitional period. And I just don't, I think we're in the beginning of the transitional period. And there's no question that we're going to be in a brand new world within 10 years. And I don't know if we spoke about this exact topic on the last podcast, but the idea is there's no stopping where we're going. Now, what I mean by that is the world is changing. There is nothing you can do about that. We are evolving. We are going through some type of growing pain, transitional period, mm-hmm. that in essence, many people may not survive, depending on how crazy it can get. And when we come out the other side, there is going to be a new society, a new way of doing things. And I don't know what that looks like. I don't know what the population numbers are going to look like, depending on how crazy this gets. But there's no question that we are in a transitional period. The fourth turning, the age of Aquarius, whatever you want to call it. The idea that AI has been let out, the genie of AI has been let out. Mm-hmm. And AI, once it fully advances, is going to take over almost every single job you can think of. And they are quite open about this. The people who do this, like Gordy Rose, Elon Musk, these guys are quite open about the fact that AI is going to make humans irrelevant. And when you combine AI with robotics, it's already making like some farm labor where they don't need to hire labor anymore because they have these advanced machines that use a combination of AI and robotics to do what maybe 20, 30 laborers used to do. So that opens up the big question of what are human beings going to do, and what does our evolution look like when we're not going to be needed so much to do physical labor anymore and things of that nature. So we're going to evolve in some type of way over the next 100 years, because evolution takes away the things you don't need, right? And it gives you what you do need. So it's an interesting question, like, what is humanity going to do? And there's going to be no question that some form of UBI is going to be necessary. And, you know, it's interesting because I was on a space today with Dr. Stephen Greer. Do you know him?
Rings a bell.
Yeah, he's a big UFO researcher. He works closely with the military, with the intelligence. Well, not like on their side, but like he consults with all them, like all the whistleblowers and stuff. And he says that, and not just him, but other people, that we had a lost century. And what he means by that is we have technology that's hundreds of years advanced. And we already have, according to him, and I do believe him, we already have the technology to live in a state of abundance. We already have the technology to live, to have a much cleaner environment, to not use dirty energy. We already have the technology to not have to worry about limitations and lack. We have all of that already, but they're keeping it under wraps for various reasons. Number one, obviously profit. And number two, who knows? Who knows how deep the rabbit hole goes as far as why they won't release these technologies. But the idea is we already have the technologies, according to this man, and I do believe him, to live in some sort of, what do they call that? A post-scarcity society or something like that?
Yeah, no, I believe that for sure. I mean, all you have to look at is the the things that they do allow to be revealed in terms of military documents that they declassify. You know, they had, like, think about how advanced the iPhone is and what that's available. They've decided, okay, we're going to give that to the public in some way, or allow that technology. Like, yeah, 50 years ago, they had this at least. And so the fact that free energy and abundance, what Nikola Tesla was,
he already did it.
He's done it. Like, these things were created, and, you know, with his life, he was shunned and silenced and all the rest of it, with Thomas Edison kind of snaking a lot of his work. And because Edison was more of an entrepreneur profit guy, they allowed him to kind of take Tesla's ideas and all the rest of it. There are a lot of things that are going to change, hopefully for the better. But I don't see, it's impossible to predict, right? But it definitely can be said that what they're allowing the public to know is years and decades behind what is actually available.
Yeah, I mean, according to Greer, we already have the technology to, I watched this show yesterday. It's called Unacknowledged. It's one of his documentaries. I was getting ready for the interview. And the other documentary was called Encounters of a Fifth Kind. And they quoted the guy who, I think he was in charge of the Northrop Grumman Skunk Works division, which is the really, really high-tech secret projects. And he said many, many, many years ago that we now have the technology to take E.T. home. And this was many, many years ago.
What does that mean?
He means that we have the ability to create our own flying saucers that can take, that we could travel to stars already. And this was a long time ago.
So there's definitely, there's some stuff that I've read and seen of the Nazis in World War II having the free energy flying saucers, probably based in areas like Antarctica and other places that they had military base and still have military bases, I'm sure. That kind of stuff doesn't just pop out of nothing, you know? Like, there are declassified military documents where you can see, yeah, the Nazis had these military bases, there's these rumors of flying saucers, that, and now we're seeing this UFO disclosure. So I want to get your opinion on what that really is like, why is now large mainstream news people being allowed to talk about UFO disclosure and saying they're not of human technology?
Yeah, we actually spoke a little bit. We actually spoke a little bit about that today. And the idea is we're on a very short time frame, in my opinion. So these people, the deep state, the very deep state, have the ability right now to run a very, very convincing false flag alien attack. They already have the technology. They can make it look very, very real. And, you know, that's why I tweeted last week, the only way we win, because you can't take on these people one-on-one. If you're a whistleblower, you're going to get murked. That's it.
Yep.
If you are trying to go at them directly, you are going to get murked. Your family is going to get wiped out. So you can't win that way. You cannot win by starting a war in the streets either. You cannot do it. Everyone, whoa, you have to fight. I mean, that's true to an extent, right? But that's what they want you to do. They want you in the streets fighting each other. That means they won. That is the reason why they do all these psyops, all this divide and conquer stuff, because they want you in the streets killing each other. The only way we can win, and I am convinced that is the only way we can win, the only way this does not become an absolute nightmare is non-compliance, awareness to not fall into their traps. And when I say psyops, that does not mean they're not going to be real. They will be very real. People will die. Bad things will happen, but you cannot give in to the outcome that they calculated that you will give into. That is where awareness comes in. And if we can get that on some type of level where enough people are like, nope, I'm not falling for this. I'm not going to fight my neighbor. I know what you're doing. I see what you're doing. Or we know this ET attack is fake or whatever the case is. Then we have a chance. But I will tell you, in my opinion, they are very close. And Dr. Greer believes this as well, that they are very, very, very close to doing this. And he sort of had, I asked him, and, how do you beat these people? You can't, like, you, right? You really can't go up against them. You're going to get murked. It's as simple as that. So the way you beat them is by non-compliance, by not falling into the trap that they're setting.
So what are the traps to avoid? It's energetically the thoughts that the population has. They collectivize and they kind of join together and create the, let's say, outlook on society, which is formed by or directed by the predictive programming that they put out via mass media, via the news headlines and all the rest of it. So what practically does that look like in people's day-to-day life? First of all, it means turning off all media. Like I said, like, if you didn't know about the news articles of things, would it even exist in your world? Unlikely. Like, there are societies that don't have internet throughout the world where they are not affected by anything because they're not viewing the pixels on a screen that are telling them how to think or what they should think about a certain thing. They're not being programmed by news articles that say, hey, that rural guy is actually your enemy, or hey, that city guy is your enemy, and vice versa. But what do, practically, what do people do day to day that is going to, I guess, improve the chances that we collectivize and harmonize in terms of our energetic imprint?
So that's a multifaceted question, in my opinion. And I think, first off, you cannot fall for their divide and conquer tactics, and you cannot fall for their psyops. Now, some of this stuff is real, right? Not everything's a psyop. Some stuff is real. And it's really hard to differentiate between what is real and what is a psyop. But the idea is, so how do we move? Like, why do me and you not fall for these things, right? And I'm not saying we don't fall for, we may fall for some stuff without realizing it. I'm not going to sit here and say that that I'm Mr. I don't fall for anything, and I'm Mr. Intelligent. I'm sure there's stuff that I fall for too.
Yeah.
But I think it really comes down to this. I think it comes down to, on a spiritual level, understanding that we have been indoctrinated by society since day one, since we were born. Starts with our parents, goes to school, the internet, our friends, the media, and what happens when you, and then religion, and what happens when you do all this. So you're taking in all this information, and you're just told to believe it, believe it, believe it, believe it, believe it. And then you create your identity, your personality, so to say, your identity on the idea of all these premises that in many cases you may not even have tested out yourself.
Yes.
You were just told to believe that 2 + 2 = 4. And yes, 2 + 2 does equal 4, I get that, but you get what I'm saying. And so, like, you're told to believe this, you're told to believe this, this is this, this is it. And, you know, at the end of the day, everything in culture and society is a meme. It's a meme. It's an idea that we're told to believe. So I think we're at the beginning of this, of overcoming this type of stuff, is really quite simple. It's not simple at all, actually, but it's really, it's, you have to become aware. It all comes down to awareness. Yep. I keep saying that. And there's a book that I highly recommend everybody read. It's called The Fourth Way by Ouspensky. And it's an interview with Gurdjieff, if I said his name correctly. He's one of my favorite philosophers. And he talks about the idea of mechanicalness and people who live by their instinct. And because most, and it's most people too, it's like 99% of people. I would say only, you know, in his view, it's even more than 99% of people. Like, even the people who think they're awake really aren't awake, and they really don't have self-remembering. But the idea is to have awareness to, for example, like, if you have, well, if you have beliefs, right? You have certain beliefs that that's your software program. Whenever you do something on instinct, it is based on your beliefs and your generalizations and your meta models of the world. You don't think about it. You just know you have an instinctual reaction based on something you were taught that you have allowed to ingrain. You have allowed it to sink from your conscious mind to your subconscious mind. So now, like, say, for example, someone irks you, you instantly are going to have the same reaction that you always do. You're going to get angry, so on and so forth. Whereas opposed, if you're an aware person and you say to yourself, I'm not going to make that instinctual reaction. I'm actually going to just keep myself calm. I'm not going to have a knee-jerk reaction. And I'm not going to get defensive for something. And yes. So it all comes down to, in my opinion, which we spoke about on your last episode, it all comes down to living in your essence and understanding who you are on an authentically energetic essence level. And when you understand that, who you are, and you live in your essence, you are very, very difficult to manipulate, because you think for yourself, you are highly aware, and because of that, you're able to objectively look at things and say, do I want to, is this true? Am I, you know, how am I going to react? What do I think about this? You know, it always goes back to the software system that we have, that all those beliefs that have been ingrained in you since society. That software system is where all your instinctual reactions come from. It is where all of your, everything you do in life is based on that software system. So it comes to the point where, if I want a better life, right? If I want to attract different people in my life, if, say, for example, I don't like what's in my life right now, and I don't like the people that are in my life, I don't like the thoughts that I'm thinking, that is because the frequency that you're vibrating on and your data that you carry is attracting similar data. And what I mean by that is, if you are a positive person who eats well, takes care of themselves, and just thinks very high frequency thoughts, you're going to attract other people like that into your life. If you are a person who's down all the time, low vibration, suicidal, whatever the case is, you're going to attract those type of people in your life. So if you walk out into town and you're a negative person, other negative people are going to find you. Not only are people going to find you, negative situations are going to find you, because that's the cord of energy that you are tapping into. Now, not only will you do those things, attract negative situations and negative people, but you will also, I am of the conviction that we don't think our own thoughts, we tap into thoughts. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
So if you have a low vibration thinking, you're going to attract low vibration thoughts from the ether. Mm. If you have very high frequency thinking, like someone like Tesla, who is an absolute genius and was able to peer through things that people couldn't understand. So he had access to a very rare strata of a frequency of thought that was reaching him, because he's attached to that very rarefied cord that was able to bring him that type of information. You follow?
Yeah, I mean, he had a quote that we are but receivers of information.
Yes, we're all receivers of information. The question is, what type of information are you receiving? And that is based on your internal data system. I'm going to give you an example. I did a tweet the other day. So I've had about 30 mentoring students since the beginning of 2023. And I kid you not, man, more than half of them were 11 light paths.
Yeah.
Like, think about that for a second. That there's one, two, there's 9 + 3, there's 12 light paths. 55%, if not 60% of the people I have mentored are 11 light paths. Think about that for a second.
Mm-hmm. Overrepresented.
You understand where I'm getting at?
Explain it.
What's that?
Yeah, it's just like a very high representation based on...
Well, not even that. It's I'm attracting other people like me.
Right.
Because
you're
that's
an 11 life path?
That's the frequency I'm on. Now, another example. What's that?
Are you an 11 life path?
Yes, that's what I mean. Yeah, right. I'm an 11 life path. And like, I'm like really an 11 life path. Like, before I even knew what an 11 was, I knew I was an 11. So like, when I saw it, I was just like, oh yeah, that's me.
Yeah.
But another weird thing. I went away to Miami 2 weeks ago, a week ago, and I met two people I never met before, part of the Bartcoin team, and I never met these guys before in my life. I knew them from Twitter, and guess what? Those two guys were 11 light paths. Like, think about the odds of that for a second.
Mm.
Now, you see where I'm going with all this? So where I'm going with all this is everything is energetic and everything has affinity. And we attract like, we attract people. So think of it like a chemical reaction, like when hydrogen meets up with oxygen and creates water, for example. Likes are attracting likes. Things that can connect and bind to each other are binding to each other and they're creating something else. Male, female, child, right? And then what happens is when you look at social groups, right, they all have the same alignment. They're usually the same type of people. So if you break it down to an energetic level, we're all just strands of energy and we're attracting other strands of energy to us, like-minded. You get it? So if you want to change your life, the very first thing you have to do is you have to change your data. So how did I get into that from what you just asked? I think it, at the end of the day, man, it comes down to being aware. It comes down to really thinking about who you are and what you believe, why you believe what you believe. People who question everything are not going to fall for bullshit that they see on TV.
Yeah, so I think the takeaway from that all is that it's less of, hey, this is my to-do list of practical things that I can do in this physical world and that's going to lead me to a better outcome, and more so internally analyzing yourself and trying to improve your internal energetic signature through thought, through action, through awareness, in order to create the resonant energy that you want to attract. That is the kind of internal first way to improve your life, rather than thinking about it, oh, I need to apply for X amount of jobs and then I need to you know, practice things like this. Yes, you need skills, and yes, you need to take action in that kind of 3D mentality perspective of like, okay, this is the world around me and I have to do things here. But the more, like the most practical thing really is to fix yourself. Not that, you know, you're broken, but some of the belief systems that have been installed by other people is malware. It's a virus that is in your head that has been programmed there by other people that want to keep you down. And
it might not necessarily be a virus, but it's a program, sure.
Yes. Yeah. So let's say virus to mean a program that is negatively affecting you or is holding you back from what you want to ideally achieve at this point in time. And if you are mentally attached via your ego to a belief, to the point where if you see conflicting information, you block it out, because if you take that new information and it disproves something that you thought previously to be true, you get upset because you had attached yourself to that premise being true. And so you get upset about yourself for being wrong previously. This is the egoic trap that can really hold people in stagnation for many years, because they cannot admit that they were wrong. They cannot admit that they were fooled or tricked. And that in itself is like a meta mistake that can apply to many, many different beliefs and many different patterns that will stop you from actualizing your highest self.
Yep.
So then your energy changes. You're improving and
you know, it's...
Go ahead.
No, I'm listening. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Just like you broke up for a second. I couldn't tell if you paused or you broke up. So
yeah. So just to round out that thought, you're improving your energetic signature by internally analyzing the egoic attachments that you have and thinking, well, why does that make me angry? Or why does that make me scared when I'm in that situation or that person says something? And understanding that really, at the end of the day, there is nothing, let's say, real other than this present moment that you are experiencing. And then the mind is the experiencer, your conscious awareness, and you're experiencing things. And you interpret what happens based on many, many years of previous experience that you attach, that the mind attaches a narrative to. And then you view everything through that narrative. And I was like, oh, I'm this person. I was born here. And then I grew up here and I had these experiences. My friends did this and went to school here and I learned this. And then all these attachments stack and stack and stack and stack. But really, they are nothing but a mental phantom, to the point where I don't know how accurate this is, but I heard a stat which is saying that people even misremember things that they attach their ego to. Like half the things in the past, they completely misremember. So maybe your memory isn't even that accurate, and you're attaching your ego and mental awareness to something that actually never existed. And you can take it to the point where...
That's called...
You can take it to the point where even if it did happen in reality, you are, let's say, embellishing it and interpreting it to be worse than it was. Or even if it was really bad, you are making it worse for yourself based on that mental interpretation, based on the narrative, when you could just as easily, because it's all a creation of the mind, do something or change those belief systems so that you're resonating on a higher level rather than fear and anger and all the rest of it.
Yeah, it's you said a lot there, so let me try to backtrack a little bit. So I completely agree with all that, and what you're describing is generalization. Well, what you're describing in a macro level are meta models, and this is actually very important in persuasion in sales, which I teach. It's called meta models, and there's like 5 or 6 of them. And you cannot communicate with someone effectively unless you know what their meta models are. If you have someone who has a away from motivation and you are selling him in a towards to motivation, you guys are going to clash and you're not going to sell that guy. You might get him, but chances are you're going to lose that sale because he is more concerned with risk and you're trying to sell him on reward, if you know what I'm saying. So even though we're talking about sales right now, you are talking about meta models. You are also talking about something called generalization. For example, if a kid burns himself on a stove or burns himself in like a hot water or something, he may make the generalization that all hot water is bad to protect himself, right? Because he got hurt by the hot water, the little kid, he doesn't know any better. So now he thinks that all hot water is bad. So in his mind, all hot water is bad. I got to protect myself. So he makes that generalization. And then their generalization and then their deletions and then it's distortion. And I would highly recommend that people study those three things. It's called generalizations, distortion, and deletion, and meta models. Those are the things that we're talking about right now. And you know what I found is, you know, I've gotten to the point in my life where I don't identify with anything. And I love the fact that if you were to ask someone to label me, it would be kind of difficult. Like people who know me well, if they were asked to label me, it would be kind of hard because I'm not easy to pin. My beliefs are forever evolving. I don't believe the same thing I did last year. You know what I'm saying? And I even find that truth itself is an evolving process. And it keeps going. It keeps going. It keeps going. It's like you open one door, another opens. So to get attached to things like, I was born in this state and if someone insult my state, I'm going to get mad. Or, you know, we're not Americans. Yes, we are Americans. That's our identity, right? And I am all for national identity and things of that nature. But at the end of the day, we're all so much bigger than things of that nature. Like, we are not our job title. We are not the college we went to. We are not the profession we have. We are something much more bigger and powerful than that. And if more people realize that they are a spiritual being having a human experience rather than a human being, just a human being, I think things would definitely be a lot different. And the fact that, like you said, people have a hard time admitting when they're wrong, I don't. If you correct me with something I'm wrong on, I'm more than happy to. I'm happy about that.
Same.
Yeah, it's like, all right, cool, I learned something. And you know, and as I've gotten into esoteric studies over the last 20 years, I realized that it just never stops. And it never stops. It's like you learn one thing, another thing. It always seems like there's always another level. And, you know, that's one thing we've been lied to about substantially, in my opinion. And it's a sensitive topic. And, I you know, it's people definitely get really, really defensive about it, but I think that I think the mainstream religions have lied to us substantially. Like, there's a tremendous amount of truth in them, but I believe that they obscured so much stuff. And it's just funny because people like identify with this stuff, and you're identifying with something you cannot prove. Yes, you read it in the scripture and you believe these scriptures are real, but it's like, dude, did you witness it? And, you know, the way I look at spiritual things now is I have a subjective spirituality. Do you know what I mean by that?
No, please explain it.
Yeah, I have my own view of God based on how God has interacted in my life. I have my own view of certain entities based on how they have reacted. Like, my subjective experience of them, not what someone told me. Like, you know, people, you look at the God of the Old Testament, for example, he looks like a tyrant. Like, that's not to me, and, you know, people get bent out of shape about this. To me, the God of the Old Testament isn't worthy of worship. And, you know, it's a really bold thing to say, right? I might burn in hell for that. But I think for myself, and I look at that entity in the Old Testament, and I'm like, wow, this guy's not cool at all. Like, that's not my view of God. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, so let's
and I just can't do it, bro. I can't do it. And it's like, I have my own view of God. That's what I believe. That's how I feel God has interacted in my life. So I'm getting a little off topic, but my point is, you really shouldn't identify with anything that hasn't shown itself. Now, if you try to challenge me on something that I know for an absolute fact that it happened to me and I have subjective experience, I will defend that.
Yes, as you should. But I think this topic is inflammatory and therefore good, because when something is inflammatory, it's usually attacking the strongest illusions. And your strongest identity ties are the things that need to be analyzed. And you should never fear or attack information or a perspective that challenges your views, because in the process of your views being challenged, you would hopefully get to a better answer, a more truthful perspective that if something is true, it doesn't fear being challenged. So let's lay this out a little bit in more depth. The religions that are the mainstream ones of today are objectively one of the largest causes of human disagreements, war, judgment of others, fear,
murder,
everything. And not all of them can be totally correct, right? So,
no, absolutely not.
Someone has to be wrong on some level. And I think that there are truths that are consistent among the different religions. And the thing to avoid at the heart of it is dogma, dogmatic thinking, in that if,
you know,
if it's challenged, you say, nope, that can't be right. Yep. And then you don't allow any discussion. And that's dogmatic thinking. And if you did that of any topic, on science, on health, there's no, vegan food is better. Like, there are dogmatic vegan thinkers. And we all see that, actually the science says animal-based nutrition, like you have better intake of nutrients, like people accept that. But there are dogmatic thinkers that have attached themselves to being vegan, so they can't accept any new information. The same occurs with people that are religious or subscribe to a particular religion. And as we dive into this topic, I think it's important to note that I've said this before on the podcast, the only unfiltered connection with God that you can experience is you and God. And there's no church, there's no book, there's no anything that can come in between that. That is the only thing that you can really know is true. Otherwise, you're taking other human interpretations as fact. Other people that wrote the Bible, and we know the Bible was changed by the church over years and years. And I'm sure the same has occurred with other holy books. It's like there's the connection that you have to God, which you can explore on your own, and no one else can possibly attack that. Like, that is the truth that you should focus on, not even what me or Michael are saying about this stuff. And when you...
I think you're breaking up a little bit. I can't tell if you're pausing or you're breaking up. I just want to make you aware.
Okay. Hopefully it's coming through.
The majority of the conversation is coming through, but there's sometimes you break up and sometimes I think you're pausing, or I can't tell if you're getting broken up.
Okay. If I pause, I'll pause for a good 10 seconds so you can jump in. But that was my point to set this up.
You don't have to pause for 10 seconds. I just want to make sure. Yeah. But I agree. Well, finish your thought and then I'll elaborate on that.
Yeah. So the thought is that particularly among, I guess, the subculture of Twitter, there is a Christian perspective, and a lot of my friends are of this way, where if you don't believe exactly what they believe, then you're wrong and you're going to hell forever. And that doesn't make any sense to me, that in our exploration of this world, in our implementation of the free will that God gave us, in that questioning and just, okay, well, let's figure this out, that if you don't believe XYZ, then you're going to burn in hell for eternity. Like, that just doesn't add up to me, but...
It doesn't resonate with me either.
The dogmatic nature of it is such that it keeps you in the fear, the judgment of other people if they don't think the same way as you, which could be said about any topic, not just religion. And that's something to deeply avoid.
You know, it's so there's a lot there, right? So the idea, well, number one, here's my view about religion. Religion has been the church has changed so many things over the years, and I am thoroughly convinced that if Jesus Christ came back today, the first thing he would do is destroy the church. And I say that with conviction.
Yeah.
Jesus was actually very against a lot of religious practices of the people around him at the time.
Yep.
And he definitely would not have been in favor of an institution such as, in my opinion, the Vatican and things of that nature.
Yeah.
The Vatican has changed things. I believe they are the ones who put hell in the Bible. I don't believe in hell. Now, with that being said, I do believe in a hell-like frequency where there's hellish type of beings and demons.
Yep.
But like an actual place where you suffer for eternity, I don't believe that. My view is that when you die, you will go to the place that matches your frequency, and
yes,
none of it is permanent. Now, as far as the church goes, here's my problem. In 2023, I've actually delved very, very, very deeply into the divine feminine. And one of my problems with the church is they have completely obfuscated and outright deleted the divine feminine. And in my eyes, being that I study esoteric topics and things of this nature and energy, I know that there cannot be a all-male trinity. There has to be the male force, the female force, and the child, which is usually an integration of the forces. So I've delved into very deeply the divine feminine. And what I have found is that the Holy Spirit is a female entity. The Holy Spirit is most likely the divine feminine. There's some people who will get bent out of shape about that. Now, the divine feminine is also a very dark force. Yes, it has a light side, but it's also a very dark force. The male force is creative and the male force is creative and it represents thought and things of that nature, constructive thought. The female force is chaotic, dark, and it represents the subconscious, where the male represents the conscious mind, and the female represents the conscious mind, the subconscious mind. So when you're doing shadow work, for example, from a psychological standpoint, you are working with the divine feminine or the female energy. When you are doing constructive work, like building things, you are working with the creative God energy. So in essence, wisdom was always known as Sophia. There's many different goddesses that the Holy Spirit has been attributed to, and many of these goddesses are quite controversial figures compared to the Christian religion. And back in the Middle Ages, they removed the goddesses that were associated with the Holy Spirit. They removed them, and they just made it, I guess, like a dove or something. But prior to that, the Holy Spirit was represented as a young female, a young, beautiful woman. So where I'm going with all this, wisdom has always been represented as Sophia, or a female for a she. If you notice, like King Solomon, when he speaks about wisdom, he calls her she. So where I'm going with all that, like the fact that you could jot out an entire energetic force out of the Trinity, or obfuscate it, whatever you want to call it, to me, it reeks of, what's the word? It just reeks of, it just doesn't make any sense. So it loses a ton of credibility right there in itself, in my opinion. I know a lot of people are going to get bent out of shape about this, and that's fine, because I stand by my opinions.
Yep.
And they're just opinions, although I do believe I have a lot of information to back this up. So the church, like I said, I think Jesus would be the first one to turn against the church. And, you know, it all depends, right? I'm not going to sit here and say I have the final answer on spirituality, but here's my whole thing with what you just said, dogma, right? So if I'm God, right, if I'm this almighty creator and I have a child of my creation that is curious and wants to know and seeks to understand, why would I send him to hell because he's questioning? Like, that is my boy right there. Like that's my favorite kid.
Yep.
You know, because he's not just thinking he's thinking. He's becoming, you know, he's questioning things. Like, if you had a kid, wouldn't you want him to be curious?
Yep.
Yeah. So it's like when these people tell me I'm going to hell because I look into this or I look into that, or astrology is evil or numerology is evil. When they say that to them, when people say that to me, I say, well, if you think numerology or astrology is evil, then you think God is evil, because the highest force in the universe is what created all this stuff. It's just a simple fact. The heavens and all these things were created by numbers and frequencies and energetic constructs, and they have a code behind them. So to call, yes, maybe some magic is evil, or maybe magic shouldn't be used. I'm not saying that's not untrue. But what I'm saying is, to call it evil is to call the mechanisms of the creator evil. You follow?
Yeah, exactly.
That's how I see it. I'm not saying I'm 100% right. So, So when it comes to dogma, I am not the type of person, I think you're the same way as me, I am not the type of person that can just be told to believe something. If they are in fact true, that what these people are saying, I believe I will find that on my own. What I cannot do is be told to believe something. Like, if the Christians are right, or if the Muslims are right, and they believe they have the absolute truth, I have to go a different path to find that truth than they are. They're just believing it. I can't do that. I have to find it myself, if you know what I'm saying.
Yes, exactly. And I think an important distinction here is to understand and know that your actions and how you carry yourself are the ultimate arbiter of, you know, how Christian, how godlike you're being. And if you take information, use it to understand the world better, and choose to act in a way that uplifts those around you as your highest directive, that can't be demonic. Like, it just doesn't add up, that because you know information, and because you question things, and because you try to understand the world in the best way in order to help your fellow man and increase the level of peace that's in the world, and uplevel your own frequency in order to access the higher levels of information, in order to bring about, you know, better functioning of this 3D world as we find ourselves in a human form, that can't lead to eternity and damnation. It just doesn't make sense. But if you use the dogma, which many, many thousands of people have done over the years, in order to kill millions of people under your dogmatic ideology of these people don't know, therefore they need to die, that is the most demonic thing you could possibly do. And I understand that, you know, holy crusades and things like that, like, there is some motivation where wars are fought, in that I think God would agree with some level of, you know, killing human sacrifices and things like that, you know, like that.
Yeah.
There's, even within that, there's areas of a gray kind of morality, and the right thing to do may involve physical force. But in terms of, all you have to do is look at what the Pope is saying now in terms of, like, you know, open borders and drag queens in the churches and things like that. Shit is demonic. But there are many people that think just because he has the special hat of the Catholic Church that they have to agree with that. It's like, no, that's been taken over by demonic forces at that point. Like, that's very obvious. So,
of course,
if that is occurring, could the other dogmatic stuff also have been usurped by darker forces, to the point where you have to question everything? Because if you don't, you're going to fall into the traps of lower order thinking that people then can control you by.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like you said, bro, at the end of the day, man, you could only judge people on their actions. I don't care who you worship. I don't care if you worship Pokemon. If you are a good person, and if you are in the service of humanity, and you take your shirt off the back for somebody else, and when you do things, you're doing them with the intent to better people around you, there is no possible chance you are going to hell. I don't care what anyone says. I don't even believe in hell. Now, when I say I don't believe in hell, I do believe there are demonic realms. I know that for a fact. But are they places of eternal rest, or whatever you want to call it, or eternal torture? No, I don't believe that, because it goes against the whole workings of the universe, that energy can never be stagnant, right? Like, if you were such an abomination, they would probably just recycle your soul, shatter you into a million pieces and recycle your soul.
I've read that.
If you were such an abomination. But I don't believe that happened. either. I believe that we're all on this path of refinement. Does that mean that we're going to become gods? No. Even though some people believe that's possible. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking that if there is, in fact, reincarnation exists, which I do believe it does, there's obviously a reason for that. And that reason is to continuously refine who you are. That's the only way it would make sense. And to have a permanent place such as heaven or hell, I believe there are heavenly states, and I believe there are hellish states. I believe there are heavenly realms and hellish realms. But I don't believe there are permanent places called heaven and hell, because that goes against the whole idea of constant movement, constant evolution. If you look at the world, it's always been about constant evolution, teleology. And, you know, we talk about free will. I'm not really convinced that free will really... So I believe it exists within a framework, not as a... And what I mean by that, so back to that book I recommended, The Fourth Way, Gurdjieff, whose opinion I respect tremendously, he said that if you live in your essence, which very few people do, if you live in your essence, the planetary rays, which we are all ruled by, the planetary rays are able to reach you more efficiently. And he said, if they reach you, because you don't have the mask personality on, that these rays will align you with your destiny. Then the guy asked him, and that makes sense when you think about astrology, numerology, right? So the guy asked him, would that be better or worse? He said it could go either way, but it's usually better. And when I think about my life, and when I know that when I'm on my path and I'm doing what I'm imprinted to do, things happen for me very effortlessly. And I think we had this conversation. I believe you know this to be true yourself, because you're on your path. You do what you believe in. You do what makes you happy on a inner soul level. Like, I believe you're doing what you're meant to do in life. So because of that, things happen. What's that?
I'm getting goosebumps or truth bumps.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying, like, I could tell, like, you're the type of guy that, and let me ask you a question. I know you worked your ass off, but how many times have people come into your life and an opportunity arose from it where it ended up working out very well for you?
Oh, insane. Like, I always say this about my quote-unquote success so far. It's that none of this would be possible without other people coming into my life and, hey, I have this opportunity. Do you want to get involved in this? Or, hey, we should do this. Like, I can't do this by myself, and I've never attempted to, you know, do entirely by myself, because I understand that it's all a group effort, and I try to take my own self out of it and just try to follow what is next on my plate, and then God really makes everything happen for me in the background.
Yeah, so you have forces at work for you largely in part because you are living it, in my opinion, in your essence. So
yeah,
things, you are going in a path that you were supposed to go in, and because you're on that path, things happen for you more effortlessly.
Yes.
You will notice that when you are on the right path, people will just come out of your life at left field, and things will just start happening for you. And I've had this happen so many times in the last few years, because it did take me a little longer in my life to get on my path as far as like what I was put here to do. And since I have been doing that, I have been having sporadic relationships that pop into my life at the most opportune times, and it just happens. And yes, you have to work your ass off. Yes, all that stuff. But believe it or not, if you're truly tuned in to who you are, it's almost going to feel effortlessly at some point.
Yeah, and I definitely feel that. And it's so much of people's unhappiness and going through their own personal hell is because they're not being truthful with what they truly want to do, and maybe they're working
1000%, bro.
Yeah, maybe they're working a spreadsheet job or something like that, which I was, and lo and behold, it was difficult for me in that, because I knew I wasn't doing what I truly wanted to do. It was an effort to apply for these finance jobs that I thought was the, you know, quote unquote best thing for me to do at that point in time. And no wonder it didn't work out, because it wasn't truly what I was about. And that is what it is about for some people. It depends on your unique destiny, and that's not, it's not for us to judge what is better or worse or whatever, but everyone really knows deep down whether they're pursuing something which they truly are about, or it's something given to them by other people or just figments of their imagination.
And you know, that's one of the biggest causes of depression today. You hit the nail on the head there. Yeah. And I just had deja vu when you were saying that, because I feel like we may have even spoke about this before, but
probably.
I just know that the large majority of depression in life, you will have a lawyer who makes $5 million a year who will be absolutely miserable because he wanted to create toy trains. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah,
it's just, and that's what life's all about. People are too focused on making money and becoming the man and all this stuff. Yes, you need to make money, right? You need to make a certain amount of money to live a certain lifestyle. And even in today's day and age, you need to make a minimum, at least where I live, you need to make a minimum 150 just to like be okay, which is pretty crazy. But the idea is, if you... I will take much, like, I'm a fantastic salesman, and I teach sales and I'm persuasion. So if I decided to get back into sales and you know, a sales position, I would probably make double what I make right now. I have no desire to do that. I do not care. You would have to probably three or four times my income for you to tell me that I have to go back into a corporate job and work 8 to 10, 12 hours a day. You would have to give me three or four times what I make now, because I don't give a shit about the money, dude.
Yeah.
I value my freedom. I'm not here to, am I going to turn down, like, do I still want to make $100 million? Yeah, sure. If it happens, it happens. But I'm not, like, in a frenzy about it. I have no attachment to it. And if it does happen where I come into a huge windfall of money, I'm just gonna keep doing things that are aligned with who I am. And so where I'm getting at with all that, I don't give a shit about money. Yes, I make it. Yes, or I wouldn't be doing what I do, right? I wouldn't be trading. I wouldn't be offering mentorships. I wouldn't be doing this. I wouldn't be doing that. We all want to make money, but what I'm trying to say is, I'm not about the money. You get it?
Yeah, it's a false god, and it's one of the
false god.
If you worship money, then that's going to lead you to a life where you do things you don't want to do for money, just so that the number goes up. And in my experience, my money increased the more I pursued what I was actually caring about, because I was willing to put in the extra hours, and those unseen forces that we spoke about direct you in a way that the money comes relatively
effortlessly
and easier.
Yeah,
I mean, effortlessly sounds like it's you're just sitting on your ass, but it's like you don't have to grind for it, and it's not a, it's just like you complete the tasks in front of you, you do what you want, and then the money comes, and then the money can be used for, again, investing into new things, creating new things that you think are going to help align with your destiny and your purpose on this world. And there's a Bible quote that the bird flies in the trees and God provides everything that he needs. He's never sitting around worrying about where the next seeds are going to come from. He just lives and the universe provides.
Yeah,
and that's kind of the same metric.
Yeah, I'll give you a perfect example of that. So a friend of mine reached out to me a couple months ago. And he was like, hey, buy this coin. And I laughed. I was like, oh, okay, another meme coin. I'll probably lose all my money. So I threw a few hundred, you know, I threw like $5 in it. And I ended up 10 times in my money. I didn't sell it all, but you get what I'm saying. So, and then I started, you know, me and this guy always got along. And, you know, we started talking. And I liked the coin. I liked what they were doing. And like I said, they signed David Icke for a 12-month speaking agreement. So I was like, cool. So I hosted a space with them one night. And I was like, you know, I was asking them about the coin, you know, the art behind it, all that stuff. And they were like, yo, you host spaces really good. Why don't you host our spaces? And I was like, all right. So now I'm hosting, you know, I mean, think about now, it's ironic. I was on a space today. Kim.com was on the panel. Keemstar was on the panel. Dr. Stephen Greer was our guest. And it's just ridiculous, right? And I didn't pursue that. It just came to me. And now, you know, I'm picking up several thousand followers from this. I am getting to interview very, very, very interesting people. and I did not pursue this. You know what I'm saying? It just came to me. Because I had a certain alignment. I believed in what they were doing. And it's just something I'd always had interest in. And out of left field, it came out of nowhere. And now it has the potential, you know, just the potential. There's always risk in these things, tremendous risk, actually. And now it has the potential to, like, really pay off one day.
Yeah.
And I did not see this, look for it, pursue it, nothing. It just came to me. And, you know, I don't want the guests to get the wrong idea here. You have to work hard. You have to put in the work. You have to work every day. I mean, the law of manifestation, where the big thing that people get messed up is they think that things are just going to manifest. It doesn't work that way. You have to build the vessels for these things to be delivered. Now, with that being said, if you live in your essence and if you're living along your energetic imprints and you're on your path that you were put here to do, if you're lucky enough to find that, work it will be fun, number one. And number two, things will just randomly happen to you that take you to where you need to be. And I know you understand this.
Yes, sir. I think that's a fantastic note to finish on. Is there anything you would like to mention to the audience before we wrap this up?
You know, just in general, in essence, I just think that next year is going to be a critical year. And I would tell people to really have awareness next year, because I think there's going to be a lot of psyops, and I some of this stuff is going to be very real, like the stuff we spoke about in the beginning of the podcast. Like, some of this stuff may really happen, and the idea is you have to, the only way you're going to stay sane during this time period is by believing you are divinely protected, really firmly believing that, asking God for guidance, and following your intuition, and not emotionally reacting to everything that happens. Because I could tell you right now, I believe things are going to kick into high gear as far as like these things go. I think you're already seeing it as far as like the operations go, and they're going to try to push us in a certain direction. And what we need to do more than anything is be hyper aware and realize that we are very powerful beings, and that we will win if we stay aware and do not fall into the traps that that these people have set for us. And I guess with that being said, I might as well give myself a little drop here. I do teach sales and persuasion. I'm very good at it. I've been doing it for 20 years. I've learned from some of the best in the business. And I do have a mentorship available. And I am also running a sale on my journal till Christmas, which is a tremendous value, by the way. It's 83 pages of concise OG content with 5+ hours of audio. In my opinion, if I reformatted this a certain way, I could sell it for $5,000 to $10,000. You can get that on sale right now. Check out the link in my bio or my pinned tweet. And if anyone wants to do mentoring, I do sales and persuasion as well as trading and investing. You can contact me again at Holder of the Fire on Twitter. And that's pretty much it, man. I mean, do you have anything you want to close out with? Did we cover everything we wanted to cover?
I think so. I think, you know, I thoroughly enjoyed that. Thank you for joining me for the second time on Soulcast. And thank you to the audience for listening, as always. We'll see you next time.
God bless you all. Thank you, Soulbreath.